The Lepidoptera Tree of Life Project, the LEP Tree, is an international community collaboration which seeks to advance progress on Lepidoptera and phylogeny along several fronts. And the main goals of the project and its heavily web-dependent structure are outlaid in this diagram here. And what I'm going to do is transverse this picture in approximately clockwise fashion, ending up with an overview of the initial results of our molecular study of relationships across the order. Now, a central premise of the project is that an interactive website promoting information exchange and cooperation among Lepidopterists could greatly speed research progress for us and for everybody else. And for almost exactly a year now, since the last meeting, we've had such a site in operation, and we have transported the entire project onto it. New features are being added continually, and it's now possible for any Lepidopterist to post a description of his or her own research and its products. Our own molecular and other results are posted immediately, long before publication, so check us out at leptree.net. Now, one ultimate goal of the website, in turn, is to provide a universally accessible repository of everything that's known about Lepidoptera and phylogeny. And so our informatics gurus have recently placed online a template for entering that information, behind which is a set of incomprehensible web tools which are designed to facilitate exchange with other web projects such as the Arizona Tree of Life Initiative. And we invite anybody who would be interested to contact us about trying out this tool and creating a web page about your favorite Lepidoptera group. Now, our project is not building any morphological data matrices, but we are making good progress toward a product that we hope will greatly facilitate construction of such matrices in the future. Namely, we're getting the experts together in all groups to produce a unified glossary, we hope, of morphological homologies across Lepidoptera, reconciling the current welter of conflicted nomenclature. And this has been going along very nicely. Susan and Amanda hosted a very productive workshop on the female genitalia earlier in this meeting. So we know that to fully understand the evolution of the Lepidoptera, it will be necessary to estimate the ages of the major lineages, and that really has not been done. And to do this, we're going to have to squeeze every last drop of information from the understudied LEP fossil record, and this week from Bruce Archibald's talk, I learned that that record is departed because the Lepidoptera are unsinkable. So led by Conrad Lavender and Jay Soane, we're critically reviewing the entire fossil record. We're building a catalog, and we're going to post this online and invite experts in each group to critique the current identification. And just this week, the first sample pages have gone online, and they're going to look like this. Let's see, you're going to see a taxonomic list of all known fossils, and if you click on one of those, you're going to be able to get a comprehensive account of what's known about each individual fossil, and you click on that again and you'll get an image of what that fossil looks like. And when we get them in the, when we re-photograph these fossils, we are going to send them off to experts to see if they actually can see any synapomorphies in them. Early indications on that fossil are encouraging. Now, the molecular backbone phylogeny, which is going to be one of our central projects, draws on our collection of alcohol-preserved materials, which we intend as a permanent world resource. And at present, the holdings are something over 10,000 specimens, 1,800 genera, contributed by more than 100 collectors, to all of whom we are very grateful. And in turn, our project has already provided material to a dozen other phylogenetic projects around the world. It's also the case that over the past year, we have developed a very useful fruitful collaboration with the Lepidoptera Barcode of Life project. We've sent them some 1,200 specimens. They have provided confirmation of IRDs in most cases, and a few cases concerning authorities that I'm too polite to name, well, they actually found a few mistakes that we made. And in return, I think our material has been useful to some of their projects, and it's led to discussions about the possibility that maybe Tree of Life and Barcode of Life could eventually combine forces. If maybe you put those two data sets together, you might be able to get something approaching a species-level phylogeny. Sure, for all the Lepidoptera. Our own molecular sequencing has been progressing rapidly. We've now got completed or in process sequencing for about 400 species, representing most of the families, and for about half of those species, we've done our basic set of five especially well-tested genes, totaling about 6.7 kb. And for the other half of those, we've now sequenced 19 to 26 genes, so 15 to 19 kb. and we have posted our results over the past couple of months, and we're going to publish those jointly with the many people who has helped and guidance have made those studies possible. And those first results come from a set of pilot studies. The first thing we undertook was to solve the following problem. Somehow you managed to argue for the money, even though you had this no idea as what would be the optimal strategy of gene versus taxon sampling to maximize the number of strongly resolved nodes you could get before your money ran out. So we did some experiments with different ratios of gene to taxon sampling in different parts of the tree to try to get some idea of this. And I'm going to finish with a result of one such experiment. And it's the one we intend to publish first as soon as we figure out how to actually write a paper with 21 authors. And so this study tested the ability of our favorite five genes to resolve relationships in the very large putative clade Obtectum mare, which consists of the so-called Macrolepidoptera and their nearest relatives. The total number of taxa is 123, and these included a substantial number of more primitive Lepidopterans as outgroups. Our analytical approach has been maximum likelihood using the program VARI. And the tree I'm going to show you is big enough that I'll break it into two parts and tell you a message in case you can't read it. Here's the top half of the tree. And I'd summarize by saying that the overall degree of resolution is as follows. Most families and superfamilies previously recognized were recovered, but with quite variable degrees of bootstrap support. We did find very gratifyingly strong resolution within superfamilies, including a number which had not been previously studied, things like pyraloids, geometroids, noctuloids, corticoids, and so on. But there is very little strong resolution among superfamilies. It clearly is going to take a lot more than five genes to strongly resolve those deep branches. And on the other hand, close inspection shows that there really is already a lot of information about deep divergences in these data. So on a broad scale, the positions of most families correspond approximately to where they lie in the working hypothesis laid out in the Christensen Bible, which our project seeks to test. And it was very reassuring to me this week to talk to Lauri Kaila from Finland and discover that where our trees depart from previous groupings, exactly the same departures are seen, without exception, in the parallel molecular analysis that they're doing on a similar scale. So we decided to see whether the current data had the power to statistically reject some of those previous groupings, even though there's not strong support for individual nodes. So here are the results of some of those tests. And now you can see that in a number of cases, our data are able to significantly reject the notion that the clade as previously defined was monophyletic. And in fact, the troublemakers in many of these cases seems to be the butterflies. And so I'll finish by telling what they did. Butterflies are supposed to be Macrolepidoptera, along with big things like the silk moths and sphingid moths and geometrids and so on. But they insist on our trees always falling lower down on the tree. And their place is taken next to the other Macroleps by the pyraloid moths. And these guys have always been called Microlepidoptera. They tend to be internal or concealed feeders as larvae, unlike Macroleps. On the other hand, unlike butterflies, they do share with most Macroleps the possession of paired tympanal organs along the abdomen, the size of the abdomen of the thorax, which are probably devices for detecting predators that hunt using sonar, and especially bats. And so those observations then led me finally to speculate a bit about what's going to happen in the next, in my mind, 12 to 18 months. First of all, given the rate at which sequencing is going in two different continents, I think by the end of next year, we're going to have varied matrices on the order of 500 or more exemplars across almost all the families scored for 20 or more genes. The results now are preliminary, but it looks to me like there's going to be at least some major changes in what we thought was the case beforehand. And I'm very excited by the prospect that then those changes will then lead us to reconsider the history of some of the traits which are arguably the most important for determining diversification rates in Lepidoptera. So I'll finish with one example, is that the reversal of those positions between the butterflies and the pyraloids, on the one hand, suggests it's at least possible that there are fewer origins and losses of these tympanal organs than has been thought previously. And on the other hand, it looks like there may have been more gains and losses of exposed external feeding than we thought. And so with those prospects for improved phylogeny and and revitalized study of the macroevolution of Lepidopterans, it's a great time to be a Lepidopterist. Thanks.